We're in the current daf, Masechta Baba Basa, daf Pei. Begin at the top line of the Yomar. The Gemara continues with a new Mishnah, continuing on a related theme of this parak regarding when the person purchases an item, what is automatically included in that. That's what the Mishnah discusses, different items related to that halacha. So, halakeach perish shoybech mechaber. If someone purchases the product of a dovecot from his friend. So, for example, let's say in the beginning of the year, a Nisan time, he tells him, look, sell me the produce, which the produce of a dovecot are the doves that are there, from this year. Which means to say basically the new birds that are going to be born every single month from this year. That's what he wants to buy from him, but the mothers, meaning the ready birds that are there already, that he's not buying him. Now, the normative of doves is that they hatch two birds every single month, one male and one female, except for the month of Adar, where then they don't give birth. Now, these children themselves, at the end of 2 months, they themselves then go ahead and have children, a brood, two birds, every single month themselves. And these two birds that are born every single month are called brecha. So, says the Mishnah, the halacha is, so someone that's purchasing the peiros, meaning the new birds that are born from this dovecot for this year, the lekeach, the consumer, is mafriach brecha rishayna. He has to let that first pair of birds that are born for the mother to fly with the mother, meaning to be maintained with the mother, and that first set of birds is not sold to him. Because it's normative for those who would sell the peiros of the shayvach, meaning the new birds of the dovecot, to hold on to the first set of birds for themselves. And the reason for that is so that that pair of birds, those first two children, should be company for the mother to maintain the stability of the dovecot. Because if not, maybe the mother's going to run away and go settle somewhere else. And the problem is that he wasn't selling the dovecot. He wants to maintain the dovecot. So therefore, we assume that also, not just the first pair of birds that's born for the mother, but also that first pair of birds that's born this year, he wants that to be maintained with the dovecot, because that pair of birds itself is also is necessary for the stability of the dovecot, because he wants the dovecot. Dovecot is for the birds inside, which is the mother. That he's holding on to. He's only selling the new birds this year. Now, additionally, to maintain the mother, she has to have company, which is the first set of birds, and therefore he holds on to that too. That's not included in the sale. Now, the Gemara is actually going to explain that even this first pair of birds, this first brood, which we call the Brecha Rishayna, that we also have to leave over for them to have company, that maybe they're going to run away, because there you don't have the company of the mother, as the Gemara is going to explain, because although children are company for the mother, but a mother is not enough company for the children. And if the first pair of birds are going to run away, so then also the mother's going to run away, so it's going to come out, there's going to be a loss for the shayvach. Then the Gemara is going to actually explain that not only you have to leave over the first pair of birds for the mother, but you have to leave over the first pair of birds that grow for this first pair of birds. But what our Mishnah tells us, at least, is about the part about leaving over the first pair of birds, and all the other new birds are sold to the consumer. The next case, peiros keveres. If let's say someone buys all the produce of the beehive of this year, which refers not to the honey, but rather to the new bees that are born in the beehive, the halach is neutel gimel nechilim. So he takes three streams, which are three groups of the first births of the bees, which are three different times, and each time takes around a period of 9 to 10 days consecutive, one after the other, because the normative way it is by the beehive is in the beginning of the summer months, it comes out from the beehive a stream of bees that were just born by their mother, and they sit on the branch of a tree. Then the farmer, the owner, brings a new beehive, and the bees go in there. Then 9 or 10 days later comes out another stream of bees, and they sit on a different branch. And then they bring out a hive, an empty hive for them, and they fill up that hive. And so it happens a third time, and that's called a tirtzel. Now, Rashbam says that actually that those places, like in Greece, that they could happen up to 7 or 8 times. But he says in our country, the majority of them are only 3 times, and the third one's already the least effective of all of them, because the later on the streams are, the worse they are. And therefore, that's why Mishnah is telling us that it's enough for the buyer to get the first three streams, which are primarily the most effective streams that there are. And then, after those first three streams, umesaris, In other words, that from this point and on, the seller then causes that the bees should stop producing, which is like making them sterile, which is what the word serious means, that they're not going to make any more pairs, not going to make any more bees, so that they should be busy and involved instead of making bees, of having children, but rather instead making honey. Because as long as they're making honey, then they're not having children. And then the honey itself belongs to the seller. Because that's what how people usually use the beehive, that after all the streams go out, then they make honey, and then some kill the bees and then take the honey, or some take the bees and put them into an empty beehive. But the point is to then get to the honey. So after the first three streams are taken by the buyer, then the seller, so to speak, makes the bees sterile. Now they, which the Gemara actually is going to explain what this term mesaris is. It doesn't actually sterilize them. But then they go ahead and they stop making children, and there's no more for the buyer, and instead they make honey. Continues the Mishnah. Different case. Let's say he buys chalis devash, the honeycombs that are there in this beehive, which is that after the bees had children, then the streams go out, then there's the honey over there, then the owner goes and takes the honey, which they're made in like shapes of what's called chalas, like honeycombs, and there's around 10 or 20 of them side by side, which is a combination of wax and honey mixed together. Now, if someone sells the honeycombs of his beehive, but he has not sold the beehive itself, so he wants to maintain the beehive throughout the winter months to hold on to it till the next summer, so that then the bees can make more children and have more honey. So we assume, and that's part of this halacha, that the seller would want to maintain at least two honeycombs, although he's selling all the honeycombs of the hive, two of them he would want to hold on to so that the bees have what to provide for themselves throughout the winter months so that they can be maintained till the summer. And therefore, the halacha is manich beis chalas. Therefore, although he sold them all the honeycombs, but two of them has to be kept in the beehive for the seller. Last case of the Mishnah is zeisim lakuts. If let's say someone sells the rice to his olive tree to cut down the branches for the buyer to use the wood, so then the buyer still has to be, leave over at least two branches, which then from those two branches could sprout the new growth of the tree. You have to leave that amount. Again, all these halachas share that commonality, where although the payers are being taken, but for the maintenance of the thing itself, that's not including the sale, and that has to be maintained for the seller. Now the Gemara asks, on the first halacha of our Mishnah, that seems to be contradicted because Vatanya. We learn in the Brice that says that if someone buys the peiros of the shevich, which are the produce of the dovekat, meaning the doves of that are born this year. So the Braisa says, you have to be mafriach, meaning you have to leave, the buyer has to leave by the seller, brecha rishayna vishniya, the first brood and the second brood. Now, the assumption of the Gemara and the question is that these two broods, these two peers of children, are both from the mother. For example, the first peer, which our Mishnah mentions, that of Nisan, and the second pair that have born an ear. Now, therefore, that contradicts the halacha of a mishnah that says that you only have to leave over the first brood, that of the mother in the month of Nisan. Whatever is born afterwards, it's all sold. But yet the Braisa says you have to leave over the first pair and the second pair too. Some Rav Kandi says, Loi kasha, it's not a difficulty. Actually, it's not a machlekes. There's no contradiction in Mishnah and the Braisa. Because halah, this that it says in the Braisa, that you have to have not only the first pair, but the second pair, it's not going back on the mother. It's actually going back on the first brood. That first brood that you have to leave over for the mother, when it goes ahead and has 2 months later its own brood, its own first pair, that pair you have to leave for their mother, which is the child of the original mother. And actually, that's what Rashbam says the words mean when it says in the Gemara, Halah, what it's saying is that when it says in the Braisa that you have to leave over the first brood and Shni, and the second one, it means La, meaning for the first Rishayna that we just said, you need the second one, meaning also this their first peer, you have to leave over so that the first peer of children should be maintained. Because what's going to make them stay? You need them to stay so the mother can stay. What's going to make them stay is only if their children stay. But Ha Li'ima, this that we said, both in the Mishnah and the Braisa, that you have to leave over Brecha Rishayna, the first brood, that was talking about for the original mother. You have to leave them over for the mother, which is her first brood, so that they should be company for her. Now, that's what the Mishnah was saying. And that's what the Braisa came to tell us, that however, from that first brood itself of the mother, you have to leave over their first brood too. And what the Mishnah didn't say, the Braisa is explaining. Now, Rashbam says this, that The Brice is calling the produce, meaning the first pair of children, of the first pair themselves, secondary. Shnia, why is it second? It's their first ones. It's because they're shniyim, they're secondary to the mother of their mother, because grandchildren are like shniyim, they're not first generation, they're second generation to the grandmother, where therefore that's a called shniyim, because they're the first pair of her first pair. But both the Mishnah and the Braisa agree, and when someone sells the peiros of a shevach stam, that's, they're both talking about the same case. And the Mishnah Braisa are both talking about that it was with one sale, with one shevach, as we explained. It's just that the Braisa was explaining more than the Mishnah, because the Mishnah was only talking about the first pair of birds, but it wasn't talking about regarding that first pair of birds, if their own children should be kept or not. But that's what the Braisa clarifies and says, not only do you have to keep for the mother her first pair of birds, but even that first pair of birds, you have to keep their first pair of birds. Now, however, the Gemara asks on this, Maishna ima, why is it different regarding the mother that we said for the halacha to hold on to the dovecot, which is by keeping the mother there, which is only if you have her first pair of birds are kept with her, as the Mishnah told us, mafriach brech rishayna, and it didn't say that you have to have two sets, meaning her only her first set from Nisan, but from then on, ear and so on, you don't have to hold on to that. So what's the reason? So he said because the mitzvasa abrata is because by having this first pair of birds, meaning her daughter, we're saying this first pair of birds, and va'azuga the shafkinla. So we leave her daughter, and we leave her mate, which the Rabbi Hanan says that means to say her male counterpart. And actually Rashbam says the Gemara didn't have to mention this idea. It's just because the Gemara didn't want you to ask and say, well, why do we need the company of her daughter? What do you mean? She has her partner that's going to keep her there in the Dafkat. That's what the Gemara has explained, that no, it's not enough to have just one company, which is her mate, but rather you need to have two types of company, which is her mate and her children. So therefore the Gemara is asking, if you all you need is to have two sets of company, one is her spouse and one is her child, so then that's what maintains the mother. So ihinami, so ask the Gemara, so then the first pair of birds too, meaning let's say the daughter of the meaning the daughter of the mother, that she should also be the same thing. Titzavsa aima vazuga dishavkinla. It should be enough for her to have company with her mother and her husband and her spouse and her mate. Where you're also going to have two sets of company there too. So why are we explaining from the Braisa that you need to leave over from the first pair of birds, you need to leave over her first pair of birds too, so that she shouldn't run away. Because if she runs away, then the mother runs away, and then the dovecot falls apart. But what do you mean? Why would she run away? She has two sets of company. She has her mother, and she has her husband. So I think what it says is fundamentally different. Ima abrat mitztafsa. A mother, it's enough for her to have company with her daughter, because a mother loves and cares and is compassionate regarding the company she has with her daughter. But brata, the daughter, meaning that first pair of birds, aima, with her mother only and her spouse, loy mitztafsa, that's not going to be enough company. Rather, she needs to have her own children. Her mother is not good enough. In other words, the going down direction, that's considered company. But going up, that's not considered company. And therefore, we leave over for the first pair of birds also their own children, where now there's already a lot of chevra over here, there's a lot of company over here. We have the original mother, and you have her spouse. You have that first brood, and then you have that first brood's own children. So you have a granddaughter, so to speak. Then you already have three generations. Then even the first pair of birds are not going to run away, because they have, everyone has company now, which is even the second pair of broods, which is going to have the company of the mother and the grandmother. So therefore, Rashbam is alluding to a question, saying, wait a second, maybe you should have to leave over children for the first brood's first brood, because then they're going to run away. If they run away, then parents are going to run, and so on. So that Rashbam says no, because now there's going to be enough company that's going on around over there, that although we said that for a mother, it's not enough with a mother and a spouse, but if your mother's there, and your spouse, and your grandmother's there, and her spouse, then there's so much company ready in the birds by the dovecot, therefore then they're ready, they're going to be maintained, and therefore that's the explanation of the halacha, the Mishnah, and the Braisa. Mishnah only spoke about the first generation, but the truth is, like the Braisa says, it even goes to the next generation, but the Rashbam is talking about the generation after that is not necessary, and that's how you maintain the fidelity of the functioning of the dovecot. Now the Gemara continues with the next halacha, the Mishnah, that said, Peiros Keveres, if let's say he buys the produce of a beehive, then noitel gimel nechil masaris, as we explained in the Mishnah, the produce refers to the new bees that are born that year, and it's the first three streams that are the most productive. Those are the streams that he buys. And then afterwards, the literal translation sounds like, and that the owner sterilizes the bees. So the Gemara is b'ma masarsin, with what does he sterilize? Because that sounds like almost that he goes to the males and he makes them unable to be fertile. And why would, first of all, he wouldn't do that because he wants the bees to continue being able to produce. So how exactly does it go and sterilize the bees? So on that, Rabbi Yehuda Meshmuel, he says b'chardel. Actually, doesn't go ahead and sterilize, goes to the male part and sterilize them. Rather, what he does is he has the bees eat mustard, as the Gemara is going to explain. As the Gemara says, Ami ben Marab Mishmed Rabbi Yisrael Bechanina, they said in the West, in Eretz Yisrael, in name of Rabbi Yisrael Bechanina, that Loi Chardel Mesarsin, it's not that the mustard itself that sterilized the bees, Ella rather, it's an indirect cause, as the Gemara explains. Mitech Shapir and Chad, since their mouth then becomes sharp from the mustard that they ate, it becomes like this bitter type of taste. So Chayzis Ha'ichles Es Dub Shanon, so then, therefore, that causes the bees to eat up their honey. And because of their satiation, now they're not going to be involved in reproducing anymore, and rather they're going to be busy making new honey. So that's, in a way, is what the Meicher does, is Misaris, in the indirect way, sterilize the bees, and therefore there's only three streams, and that's what the buyer gets. Or Ben Hanan explains, actually, is that since they eat up the honey, that's even the holes of the honeycomb, so then even if they do continue having children, those are going to be in the holes of the honeycomb. And you could say that it's only going to be in the coming year that the bees are going to come out, and those are going to be from the seller, because it's only the bees of this year that the buyer gets. So that's another interpretation of how he's misaris, like he sterilized the bees, that's all the amount of bees, the first three streams, that the buyer is going to get. B'yechonam, he actually gives a totally different interpretation in this word of the Mishnah of misaris. Doesn't literally mean the interpretation of like sterilization of the males. Rather, the word siris could also be translated as skipping. As we find in the Gemara Masechet Megillah Yerushalmi, it says, Kari Sirusin, if you read the Megillah, skipping. So what the Mishnah means to say is that Noita Shleishin Achilin B'Sirus, it's one statement. When the Mishnah says that Noita Gimel Achilin Umesaris, is that he takes three streams of the bees, every other one. So he takes the first, the third, and the fifth. And the seller takes the other ones so that both of them could have from the good ones and from the weaker ones. Because as we said, the first three are the good streams. After that, they start getting bad. So the first and the third, the buyer is going to get, but the seller himself is also going to get the second one. And that's the normal way how those who sell the bees from the beehive is that they do that okay, I'll take some good and some bad, and you'll take some good and some bad. Masnita ton in the Brisa, a little different than Rabbi Yechonon was taught, that no, noitel gimel achilin bezachazeh. First he takes the first three streams one after the other. It's mekam ve'elach noitel achas amnei achas. It's after that point, after the first three streams, then they switch off who gets the stream of the bees that come after that. And Rashbam says the desta halacha, first of all, because the brisa is primary more than amiram, and moreover, the actual terminology of the Mishnah seems to indicate from the fact that it says that you take gimel nechilin, sounds like, okay, you first take the first three streams, and then it says umesaris, and then you do siris, which is then switching off, where lekeach takes one and leaves one for the seller, and so on. That's the interpretation of the brisa. Next case in the Mishnah was chalis devash. If he sells the honeycombs, menich shtei chalis bechulus, then he leaves over, the buyer doesn't take, at least two of the honeycombs have to be left in the beehive. Now, related to this halacha of the honey in the beehive, in the honeycomb, so Amar of Kahana. If Kahana says, Devash, honey, even bikaveres, even in the beehive, Einu yetzi midei maicha la'olam, does not lose its status as a food item, meaning, even though that there are times that, as we mentioned in the previous Gemara, that bees eat their own honey, even so, it doesn't lose its food status for human consumption until it's specifically designated that it should be for bees, then it's not a food item anymore. But in general, even if you have honey in the beehive, it's considered a meichel. It's considered a food item which has certain halachas if it's considered a food item for humans. Or a different interpretation Rashbam brings is that what it's saying is that no, actually only in the beehive is the honey considered an oichel, a food item. because actually when it flows out of the beehive, then actually it's considered in halacha as a liquid. Only if you thought about it and you designated you want it to be a food item, as actually it's an explicit b'raisa of this idea in the beginning of Masechtas Tyrus, that if something's considered a food item or a liquid is going to depend, and this, what Rav Kahana is saying is that in the beehive, it's considered a food item, not a liquid. But one thing says the Gemara from Rav Kahana is Amma that we see that Kasaba that he holds, that Loi Boi Machshava, that you don't have to have a thought process in creating that, oh, this is something I want to consume and making it into a food item. It's automatically considered a food item, even if it's still in the beehive. And that is the Gemara B'Meisve from the following Braisa. Braisa says, Dvash B'Chaveris, honey in the beehive, Eino Loi Eichel, it's not considered a food item where, if let's say it is to transmit tumah to something else, it has to be the size of an egg, even if it's that size of a kebeya, it's not going to be considered a food item in being metama other things. V'lo mashke, and neither is the honey considered in halacha as a liquid where it transmits tumah to something else if it's the amount of a revius. Because, as Rashbam explains, regarding the item itself, a general item, whether it be food item or liquid, it contracts tumah even in a minute amount. As it says in Teres Kainim from the words Kol Eichel Asher Ya'achil. It's just regards to transmitting tumah to other things that there's a difference between being a food item or liquid. And that is what the Brice is saying. But this honey in the beehive, it doesn't have the halacha of a liquid or a food item, not only to transmit tumah, but even regarding contracting tumah at all. So therefore, as the Gemara, you see a contradiction of Rav Kahana's halacha from this Brice. We see that it's not considered a food item. And how could Rav Kahana say that the honey in the beehive is considered a food item? So Mabayabai says, Loi, Tzricha, this that we learned in the Braisa, that it's not considered an Eichel or a Mashka, that was El Oisen Shtei Chalos. That was only for, which we mentioned in the Gemara before, and that's why we're introducing this halacha, where there's two honeycombs that are left over in the beehive throughout the winter months so that the bees have what to provide nourishment for themselves, which in Tosefta it's brought that those are the two outer honeycombs. It's over there that those are designated for the bees. Oh, that's not a food item for human consumption. That's not going to be a neichel or a mashka. But that doesn't contradict Rav Kahana. Rav Kahana's talking about it in general, the rest of the honey. The rest of the honey is eaten for humans, and therefore it is going to be considered an neichel even without making a distinct machshava, a thought process about it. The price is talking about for those two chalas. Rav Amma, he gives a different interpretation. He says, no, Rebbe Lazahi. Don't ask on that braisa on Rav Kahana, because that braisa is going like a das yachid, like an individual tana, and Rav Kahana is going like the Rabbanon, where it's specifically according to his opinion. Now, as Rashbam brings, the reason why Rav gives a different answer than that of Abaya is because generally when you use the term honey, it doesn't sound like it's talking about specifically those two honeycombs. It sounds like any honey of the beehive. And therefore, Rava didn't want to say, like Abaya's answer, that the Braisa is talking about the honey and honeycomb, specifically those two which are left over. And therefore, he rather preferred to say it that, oh, that Braisa is not difficult in Rav Kahana, because it's going like a minority opinion. What's the opinion of Rebbe Elazar that we're saying this Braisa is going like him? As we continue to Talmud Beis, that's not like we're doing the Mishnah Masechta Shviyas. The Mishnah says, and we already explained this Mishnah in Perek HaMoicha as Abaya's, Keveres Devarim, regarding a beehive of bees, he says, it has halacha as ground itself, as land. Now, therefore, as one of the cases that we're discussing, is that even if he had a machshava about it, that he wants it to be a food item, it's not going to be a considered food item to be mekabel tumah, as we're going to learn shortly from Yaris HaDevash, where it's considered like a forest, where even if you think about regarding land that you want it to be, but it's still going to be land, and land is not mekabel tumah. So, says Rebbe Elazar, it's considered like land, and therefore has many ramifications that a beehive is like land. Where, you can write a prusbul on it, which is only if one of the parties has land. If he has a beehive which is attached to the ground, it's in its own status, can be like land itself. Veinu mekabelus tuma b'mekayma, it does not contract tuma in its place, like we said, because we consider it like land, like connected to the ground. When it takes honey out of it on Shabbos, it's chayv chatas, as if you detach something that's an organic thing, that's like as if it's connected to the ground. That's the opinion of Rebbe Lasser. They say no, it's not like land. If the borrower has just a beehive, you cannot write a prusbul based on that. It's not like land. Umekabel is tumah b'mkayma, and it does contract tumah in its place, where because we do consider it already like a food item. The reidim and the Shabbos patim. Someone takes down honey from Menon Shabbos is going to be potter because it's not like disconnected something from the land. So that's their machlokes. Now, Amar Rabbi Elazar, the Amar Rabbi Elazar said, "My tamed Rabbi Eliezer." What's the reason of this Rabbi Eliezer in this Mishnah Masechta Shviyas that we just quoted? Because the chsev, like it says, the pasuk in Shmuel Aleph says, "Vayitpol oisa b'yaris hadavash," that Shaul went and dipped his stick into the forest of the honey. Now, v'chima inin yar itzel davash. What does a forest have to do with honey? El leim lochar. Rather, it's coming to tell you the following idea. Mayar hatoilish men b'shabes chayv chatas, just like a forest. If someone disconnects something from the forest, a tree, a branch, a bush, on Shabbos chayv chatas, aftvash, it's coming to teach you this idea. So to buy honey, haray de men b'shabes chayv chatas. Someone takes honey out of it from on Shabbos, it's going to be chayv chatas. That's the understanding of Rabbi Eliezer's opinion why he considers a beehive like karka because it compares the dvash to a yar. So therefore, that's what the Gemara answers. That's why it's not difficult on Rav Kahana from this Braisa. Because this Braisa is going like Rabbi Elazar. Rabbi Elazar das yachid. Rabbi Elazar is the one who holds that, yeah, it's not like an oichel, it's not like a mashka, because it's like a piece of ground. It's like the land itself. Land is not mekabel toma. But Rav Kahana, who's going like the Chachamim, it's not difficult because they hold that it is not considered land. And then, yes, it could be considered, like Rav Kahana is saying, automatically like an oichel, even in the beehive. But however, now the Gemara asks Meisvei from the following Braisa on Rava's interpretation of the resolution of why that Braisa is not difficult on Rav Kahana. The Gemara asks from the following Braisa. The Braisa says as follows: Dvash hazav mikivartei, honey that flows from the beehive, ain't a loy eichel, but loy mashka, does not have the halachic status as a food item or as a liquid. In other words, what the Braisa is saying is it's not mekabel tumah, it does not contract tumah, it's not considered as a food item. So that asks the Gemara, Bishlem ala Abaya. It's very well understandable, this Braisa, according to Abaya, that he explained the previous Braisa was talking about the honey of the beehive. What honey of the beehive was it talking about? He explained it was talking about those two honeycombs that are left over there. So therefore, we could explain that that's the same thing in this Braisa over here. The reason why it's not considered a food item, not in the beehive, or even if it flows out of the beehive, is because it's not considered a food item. It's designated for animals, for bees. So therefore, Niche, it would make sense why it's not difficult to coin Rav Kahana, because since it's designated for bees, even though it flows out, you still would have to have a mental designation of it that you want it to be a food item, because until you remove it from that status, it's not considered as a food item, because it's for it's bee food, not animal food. And therefore, it's not going to be Kabbal Tumma. But El Rava, but ask the Gemara, according to Rava, that as we said, he doesn't want to explain the case of Dvash Kever is talking about only that unique type of honey, which is the honey from those two designated loaves of honey. So according to him, kasha. But then it is difficult from this brisa to Rav Kahana, because even if, as he answered in the previous brisa, you're going to want to say that this brisa is like Rabbi Elazar, so fine. In the beehive itself, it's like Yaris Devash, it's considered attached to the ground. Okay, it's not Mekabel Tumah, but the moment it flows out, it's not considered like ground anymore. It's not considered to the beehive, and therefore then it should be considered like a food item or like a liquid, and therefore it's difficult. How is Rava going to explain Rav Kahana in this Braisa, where his answer by saying that the previous Braisa, like Rabbi Elazar, would not work for this Braisa, and ultimately you're going to have to say an answer like Abaya, and then you might as well say that same answer in the first Braisa too. Avadam Rav Zvidi says, no, it's not difficult, even of Rav's interpretation in Rav Kahana, from the question of the previous Braisa, how that then works well with this Braisa, because Kagain, this second Braisa is talking about, for example, Shezava Gabi Klimos, although it did flow out, but it flowed onto a repulsive receptacle. Now, therefore, so since when it was inside the beehive, then we already explained for Rava how he answered Rav Kahana why that previous brisa is not difficult on him. Because although he said it is a oichel in the beehive, and that brisa is not, it's not that, we said it's like Rabbi Elazar. Where again, as we said, according to Rabbi Elazar, it's considered like a piece of karka, so it's not mekabel tumah. Now, but continuing on that theme, this brisa says, even when it comes out and it's flowing out, so even Rabbi Elazar would normally agree, okay, but now it does become an oichel because it's not considered part of the karka. But since it's flowing out to a repulsive receptacle, therefore then you do need to have a machshav. It's not going to be considered automatically as a food item, even though it flowed out, because it's going on to something that's repulsive. So even there it cannot be considered oichel, because people don't usually use or eat honey that's disgusting because it went on to a dirty kli. Now, in contrast, let's say according to the Rabbanan, who they really consider it an eichel in the beehive, like Rav Kahana goes like, yeah, according to them, it would not lose its status as eichel because it falls onto a kli mois until it reaches like a state like the Gemara in Chulin on Daf Ayin Aleph from an Aleph says that even dogs wouldn't be able to eat it. But according to Rabbi Lazar, that's exactly, it works well with what Rav is explaining, how that previous brisa is, and the second brisa is also like Rabbi Lazar, where although Rabbi Lazar, similarly, that only works for when it's in the beehive, no, it works even when it comes out. Because since in the beehive it was not an oichel, and now it's still not an oichel because it's falling to something repulsive, therefore, even when it's zav from the kaveris, it's not considered as a dvar meichel, as a food item. Rabbi Yaakov gives a slightly different answer. He says, "Kigun shezav agabe kaskasin." It's talking about where, yes, in the beehive it was not considered honey because it's going like Rabbi Lazar, like a food item. And then when it comes out, it falls onto these small, thin twigs that you can't get the honey out to gather them because it gets stuck amongst these twigs. But he actually holds, not like the first answer the Gemara gave, because he holds, even if it falls on the kli mois, it is going to be considered an eichel. And therefore, that wouldn't be a sufficient answer to explain, to resolve for Rabbi. But therefore, the Gemara answered, it's not difficult on even the second, that from this brisa on Rav Kahana, according to the interpretation of Rava. But the Gemara continues asking on Rava's interpretation of how to answer why these brises are not difficult on Rav Kahana. Meisve, from the following brisa. Dvash bekevarte, if there's honey in a beehive, says the brisa, eino loy oichel b'loy mashka, it's not considered a food item or a mashka. Where again, these all follow the same theme, which was the original question Rav Kahana who said it is. So again, then you have the two approaches. You have a bias approach that says, oh, it's called talking about those two chalas. That's why it's not an oichel mashka. And then you have Rav's approach which says, no, it's like Rabbi Lazar who holds that it's not because it's considered like karka. But continues the brisa. That's where the questions become challenging. Chishav lav la'achila. Let's say the one who owns the honey contemplated and he says, I want to have this honey for consumption purposes. So then metama tumas eichel, and then it does contract tumas eichel. It will convey tumah of a food item. And lamashka metama tumas mashka, if he thought about it, he wants to have it as a liquid, then it will convey tumah of liquids, which we said is like a revius. So ask the Gemara, bishlam alabaya nicha. According to Abaya, this brisa makes sense. Whereas we said he explains who is the tana of these brises that are saying that the honey is not an eichel or a mashka. That's even like Rav Kahana. So then why are they saying that it's not going to be an eichel or a mashka? It's because it's about those two chalas which are designated for bees. Bees are not considered a food item. El Rava kasha, according to Rava, it is difficult for Rav Kahana because this brisa cannot answer like Rava had said in the first brisa, it's going like Rabbi Lazar. Because what's Rabbi Lazar's reasoning why the honey is not considered a food item or a liquid when it's in the beehive? Because it's considered like it's a piece of ground. So a machshava cannot make something as if it's disconnected. Just like you cannot have papers that are attached to the ground and say, oh, I want it to be a food item to make it susceptible to tumah. It doesn't because it's still a piece of the ground. So how are you going to explain this brisa according to Rava? Because here you can't say it's like Rabbi Lazar, because if it's like Rabbi Lazar, then even having a machshava to want it, have it as a food item, it's still connected to the ground, so to speak, because Yaris Tabash, and how is it going to be mekabel tumah? So Amalcha Rava, actually Rava tells you that Taretz Hach, actually you should answer and amend this brisa actually the other way. Chishav alav la'achila, that if you thought about it, that you want to have it for consumption purposes, actually, einu metama tumas eichel. It will not convey tumas eichlin. And lamashka, if you want it as a liquid, einu metama tumas mashkin. It will not convey tumas mashkin, which is exactly like Rabbi Lazar, where even if you thought about it, but since it's considered attached to the ground, it's not going to be considered a thing that could be makala tumma, because it's like karka. Now, Tais actually says, it's not that Rav is amending the brisa and adding a whole new word of enoi, of that it's not, which that's what it sounds like from the Gemara. Rather, he's reinterpreting the whole statement. If you read it as one long statement, you read it as follows. That honey in the beehive, says the brisa, it's not a liquid or a food item. Regarding, the second half is not a new statement, it's continuing. Regarding this idea that if chishav alav la'achila, if you thought about it, that you want to eat it as a food item, to have it be metama tumas eichlin, meaning that it's not going to be, it's one continued statement, it's not a new halacha, and that's how Rav is explaining why it's still going to be able to be like his answer for Rav Kahana that it's going like Rav Elazar, it's not difficult according to Rav Kahana. And the Gemara concludes, Tanika Basid Rav Kahana, we have a brisa that supports Rav Kahana, that says clearly like his opinion, that Dvash Bekavarta honey in a beehive, Mitama Tumas Eichlin Shleba Bakshab. It will convey Tumas Eichlin even without thinking about it. It's automatically considered a food item, which is like his opinion, not like the brisa that we had asked on. And why it's not difficult is because either that brisa is like the way Rav said, like Rav Elazar, or like Abaye said, because that Toma specifically, the two honeycombs that are set aside specifically for the bees. Now the Gemara continues to explain the halacha of the Mishnah that said if zaysim lockets, if someone bought the rights to the olive tree to cut down the branches to use it for his purposes, so manich shtei greifis, the guy didn't sell his whole tree, so you have to leave over two branches where that could be maintain the tree itself for the owner. Tanabon Linda Bryce that elaborates on these halachas. Halakech ilon mechaver lockets. If someone buys a regular tree from his friend to cut down the branches to use as fuel or whatever he wants the wood for, magbiyim in a karka tefach v'kaitzes. He has to elevate from where he's cutting from the ground at least a tefach, and from that point on he could cut off, because then at least if you're leaving a tefach above ground, then it's going to regenerate. Even if he didn't leave over any branches, it will grow back. So it'll maintain the tree for the owner. Let's say besulas hashikama. Let's say he bought the rights to cut off from a virgin sycamore tree, which was never cut off from it ever. So gimel tvachim, then you have to actually leave a height of 3 tvachim. Let's say sadin hashikama. Let's say it's actually a sycamore tree that was already cut once before and then grew back. Then base tvachim, then you only have to leave 2 tvachim of height. Bekanim ugefanim, let's say he bought the rights to cut off from reeds or from vines, from grapevines. Then minapakaku lamal, then you have to leave where there's a knot in that tree, you have to leave from that knot on upwards to allow the tree to regenerate. But the kolam ubarazim, if you bought the rights to cut down from a palm tree or from a cedar, then chayfer misharish. Then says the brisa, then you can actually dig and uproot the whole entire tree. Lefisha in gizan machlef, because even if you can leave that little part out from the ground, that root, the trunk, is not going to grow back since you cut off on the top of it, and therefore there's no point in leaving anything over. You could take out the whole thing and take everything. Now, the Gemara asks, "Ubesulas hashikamo gimel tfachim bina?" Is that really so? As the Braisa says that by a virgin sycamore tree, which means was never cut before, then you have to leave over 3 tfachim of height of the trunk, and that's what you have to. What, and it's not enough with less than that. On that, as the Gemara v'Ermina, that seems to be contradictory from Mishnah Masechta Shviyas. Mishnah says, "In kaitzin besulas hashikamo b'shviyas," and I'll cut off from the tree of the virgin sycamore tree in the Shemitah year. Why? Because that's considered doing work in agriculture, because it's actually going to help the tree grow back more. And the pasuk says, we're not allowed to prune a tree which helps it grow back more. And cutting off from this tree is going to help it grow back more. And that's a violation of the Shemitah here. Rabbi Huda, he disagrees. He says, kedarkei aser, in its normative way, as the Gemara is going to explain later, then it's forbidden. But Ella, what you could do, what's not going to improve the quality, it's only forbidden because you're improving the quality of the agriculture. But if you're ruining it, you're allowed to do that. So Magbiya Yud Fachim, what you could do is you can elevate a height of 10 Fachim, which Rashbam holds that there's a Machlekes, where the Tanakama, you could say, holds that you don't need that measurement. Rather, a different measurement, he would hold like from 3 and up would be forbidden. But Rabbi Huda says that what you could do is you could elevate a height of 10 Fachim, and then Makaitis, and then from 10 Fachim up you could cut. Because from 10 tefachim and up is just damaging the tree and it weakens it. So that's not considered a violation of the Shemitah here. Oh, here another option what you could do is goyimim me'im ha'aretz. You can then take off from within the ground, meaning if you level it to the ground, that's also a forbidden way. That's also a permitted way what to do because it's destroying and not improving the quality. So that the Gemara asks, it sounds like from the Mishnah, me'im ha'aretz hu dekashi. So what's considered harmful for the tree? For the besula sashikama, is only if you level it from the ground, and therefore that's what's permitted. But it sounds like idoch. But let's say it's a tefach or 2 tefachim. Sounds like malila. That then that would be beneficial for the sycamore tree, and therefore that's why you can't do that on the Shemitah year. So then the question is: so why, when the buyer is buying the rights for the wood of the sycamore tree, does he have to elevate 3 tefachim and up? Why, even just a little bit, as long as you're not leveling, it's going to be considered beneficial. So if it's beneficial because it's going to grow back, why do you have to leave 3 tefachim? You could leave even just 1 or 2 tefachim. So Amabayi explains as follows: gimel tefachim malila. As we're saying in the case of like in commerce, when you're buying from this original brisa, if you leave 3 tefachim height, then that's beneficial for the sycamore tree. Me'ima aris, now going to the other extreme, like we learned in the Mishnah Masechta Shviyos, if you level it from the ground, vade kashla, that's for sure going to be detrimental for it. And therefore that you could do in the Shemitah. Now the thing is that mikan ve'elach, in those interim measurements, which is, let's say, not leveled, up until 3 tvachim, or from 3 tvachim until 10 tvachim, then you actually have the loimikshri kashla, v'lave loimayla. It's neither nor this way or that way. It's not necessarily detrimental or beneficial because we're actually in doubt. Sometimes it can be detrimental and sometimes it can be beneficial. Now, therefore, you have the following ramification. Gabi Shviyas, regarding the halacha of doing work in the Shemitah year, where you're forbidden to prune a tree because it's going to make it healthier and stronger. Vir Avdinan Midi could only do something, the Vadai Kashula, which is definitely going to be harmful for the tree, where it's obvious that it's not going to improve it by this pruning, and the reason why you have to go definite that way is because it's a doubtful biblical prohibition of doing work in the Shemitah year where you have to go stringently. So only if you totally level it or above 10 tefachim, where definitely it's going to be detrimental, that's the halacha b'Shemitah year. But Gabi Mekir Memkir, regarding a purchase where the intention of a seller is to leave over for himself enough that the tree could be able to be regenerating, then Avdin and Midi, then actually the extreme is the other way. Then you have to do something for the Lekeach only if Devadi Malila. He's only allowed to cut the tree in a way that's for sure going to be beneficial, which is 3 Tvachim. You're right. So what's the area in between? That's doubtful. So either one, you have to go stringently, where regarding for the buyer, he has to go stringently, that has for sure has to be beneficial, which is 3 Tvachim. And regarding Shemitah, you have to go something that's for sure detrimental, so that's not content improving, which is either leveling it or higher than 10 Tvachim. Now another question the Gemara has in the Braisa, that it says, "B'tikolim u'barazim," regarding palm trees and cedars, cedar trees, the chayfu mesharish, you could dig and uproot the whole thing. Lefishen gizn machlev, because saving anything is not going to help, because the trunk is not going to regenerate, it's not going to grow back. That the Gemara asks for eres in gizn machlev, that's really true by a cedar tree that the trunk does not regenerate. But v'ha darish Reb Chiya bar Luyani, we have the following exposition from Reb Chiya bar Luyani. It says as follows: Ma'adech siv. What does it mean, the pasuk in Tehillim that says, Tzadik hatama yifrach, the righteous person blossoms like the palm tree. Ke'eres bavon yiske, he will grow like a cedar in Lebanon. What's it coming to say? Because you have the following question. Im nema tamar, if it's saying that's comparing a tzadik to a palm tree, which a palm tree produces fruits, but actually its trunk does not regenerate, so then says Reb Chiya bar Luyani, so lama nema eres. So then why does it say comparing him to a cedar where actually there the trunk does regenerate and does not make pears? And the imnema eres, and if it compares him to a cedar, then lama nema tama, then why is it saying tama? In other words, it's a contradiction in concepts where if you compare him to one, then you're obviously not comparing to the other because they actually have opposite characteristics. So that's what he explains, that no, it's specifically coming to say that he has the best of both. Because ilu nema eres v'loy nema tamar, if it only said he's like a cedar and not like a palm tree, I would have said that, yeah, he's ma eres enoise peres, just like a cedar does not produce fruits, av tzadik enoise peres, so too righteous did not make fruits, meaning what that means to say is because he eats all his righteousness in this world and he doesn't have the fruits in the world to come. Or it means that actually that they don't feed him the fruits of his labors. That's why it compares him to a palm tree which does have fruit, which actually that's what the pasuk says in Yeshaya Paragimel, Imru tzadiki tiv ki prima lemechil, they eat the fruits of their labor. That's what it has to say, like he's like a tamar. Now the imnem a tamar, b'lem nam eres, but if it said he's like a date palm but not like a cedar, hayisem, and then I would have said, well, ma tamar engizem achlev, that just like a date palm that the trunk does not regenerate if it gets cut off, av tzadik engizem achlev. So to the righteous, his trunk does not regenerate, meaning if he dies, then he's not going to leave a child just like him to regenerate what he was in the world. Or it means that if he falls, if he stumbles, he's not going to get up. L'kach nema eres, that's why it says comparing him to a cedar, which is that his gizay is machlev, that his trunk does regenerate, which is like the concept, like it says in Mishlei Perkav Dalet, kisheva yipol tzadik become, because a righteous person falls, but then he does get up again. But one thing we see from this exposition is that eres is gizay machlev, that the trunk does regenerate. So why are we saying that it's just like tamar in this brisa, that if you buy the rights to an eres, then you could just uproot it because it's not going to regenerate? So says the Gemara, what are we talking about over here? Bishar mini arazim, and other types of cedars. Meaning there are cedars that do not regenerate, but what we're talking about are other types of cedars that do regenerate. Could the Rabbi Bar Rav Huna, like he said, the Amar Rabbi Bar Rav Huna, Amri Bei Rav, they said in the Yeshiva of Rav, that Yud Mina Razim Heim. There are actually 10 types of cedars. So though the primary one actually does not regenerate, that one does regenerate, but we're talking about those other types that don't regenerate. Shneim, like it says the Pasuk in Yeshaya, it says, Etim Bamidbar, place in the desert, Erez, Shita, Vahadas, Veichemen, Asim, Begayim, that I placed this in the desert. As the Gemara explains, where do we see all these different types of cedars? These are all different types. Erez is Arza, which is the cedar. Shita is Tornisa, which is the pine. Hadas is Asa, which is the myrtle. Veichemen is Afarsim, which is balsam, which is this type of saraf, that this liquid that comes out from the tree, which they make pitch out of. Berayish refers to Brasi, which is boxwood. Tidar is Shaga, which is fir. Usa Asher is Shravina, which Rashbam says is not explained what that actually, what type of is that actually. But that's the 10 types. Now the Gemara actually says, Hani Zainhav, if you look at it, there's only 7 that were mentioned in that Pasuk. So the Gemara says, Ki Asr Avdimi Ame says, Hesif Alein, that the sages added on to those 7 which said in the Pasuk, Aloinim Almainim Almoigim, which that's the total for the 10 types of cedars that there are. And again, the primary cedar that does regenerate, we were talking about the other types. What are these 3 more types? Aloinim is Butni, which is the elm. Almainim is Baluti, which is the oak. And Almoigim, as we continue to talk about Pei Aleph and Med Aleph, is Kesisa, which is a type of a tree that grows in the sea, which is very precious, which we know as coral. Igadami, those say that actually the 3 that they added on were Arainim, Armainim, and Almoigim, which Arainim is Ari, which refers to the laurel. Armainim is Dulvi, which refers to the chestnut. And Almoigim, that's Kesisa, that refers to the coral. So again, those are the 10 types, different interpretation, what the 10 are, of the types of Erez, which we normally call the cedar, but that's the primary one is Erez. There's actually many types in the Erez family. The primary one, again, is Gizei Machlef, in contrast to the Tamar, but the ones we're talking about that you could uproot it is talking about the other types of cedar, that is just like the Tamar, that Engizei Machlef, that the root, the trunk does not regenerate.